taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
And welcome back. Taxation is theft. Isn't that right, Myra?
It is.
Oh, hang on a second. I have an audio issue. Myra's not coming through. Why is that? Okay, say something now.
Something now.
There we go. Perfect.
Are we good?
Yeah, we're good. So, Myra, welcome. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Myra is our, she's a part of our SWAT team, and she is running for the House of Representatives of Iowa. That's pretty
District
awesome.
70. Yeah.
Do you have to, like, I've always thought this was weird that everyone, libertarians always say district and then the number. But it's like most people don't know what district they're in anyway. So it's just kind of like when I ran, it was for District 125 in Texas. And I did have that on like all my campaign stuff. But I was just like, yeah, I'm running for the Texas House. And that was that, because I figured like if they're like, I would just show them the map and be like, if you live in here, then you can vote for me. And like, I don't know.
Now, I know a lot of people, the last cycle when I ran, they were disappointed that I wasn't on their ballot. Like, I received a lot of messages, like, I didn't see you on the ballot, you know. So, you have to make it pretty clear what area you're in. So,
interesting.
They're actually looking for you.
Well, I think I got some of that, too. I wonder if you still get that, even if you tell them. I don't know. I'm probably totally overanalyzing this, but these are just those. I have one of those minds that, like, I just look at that stuff and I'm like, is that really necessary? So a few minutes ago, I got an invite from Dan Fishman to be on the Libertarian Happy Hour. And so I went and I grabbed a beer, and I see you also have a glass of wine. So cheers. Let's talk. Why are you running for House? And why, I guess what they like to ask is, why are you running and why now?
Right. So it was never my intention to be a politician. And I think for most libertarians, that's the case, right?
Right.
We don't necessarily like that. But I, as the co-chair of Iowa, fully intended to support all of the other candidates in Iowa the last cycle 2 years ago. When I found out that the Democrat in my own district in my backyard was going to be running unopposed. And, you know, I talk to people about how necessary it is to have choices. And even if you don't like all of your choices, you don't have to like me, you don't have to like the libertarian choice, but the best I can do is give you a choice on the ballot and make sure that you have other platforms and other options available to you. So that's basically why I started and why I'm continuing. The Republicans still are not putting up anyone on the ballot. So it is a two-person race.
So it's you against a Democrat? And is, I guess, what color is Iowa?
It kind of goes back and forth. We have a red governor right now. Used to be a blue governor. So it can kind of go both ways depending on a lot of the rural issues and how those are being taken care of.
So what are some of those issues? Like the, I know, like you're trying, you're like, I just want to have a sip of wine and you keep asking me these questions. Like, what are some of those issues? What are the big ones that are important in your neighborhood, in your town? What are kind of the big issues, I guess, in general, and as well as specifically for libertarians?
Sure. So for my specific area, I'm in Cedar Rapids. I'm on the south side. A lot of things that people are kind of frustrated with is tax misappropriation. We continue to have sales tax increases and property tax increases, and we don't necessarily see any benefit from those funds. We're being told our roads need to be fixed, and everybody knows that our roads need to be fixed. They're really bad. So we keep paying more taxes because they keep saying, well, our schools need to be fixed now. And, you know, this school needs a new parking lot. And now we need all new schools. We have to build them all new. And that's fine. But I think a lot of people are frustrated that it's been years. I've lived in this area for over 10 years. And we haven't seen any benefits to those increases in taxes. So I think
that's kind of normal, isn't it? Yeah. Unfortunately. Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's always the thing. And this is what I always say is that, you know, that's what's so wrong about taxation is because we're forced to pay it regardless of how they spend it. We can't do anything. Like if you go to a restaurant and you order a sandwich and instead of bringing you a sandwich, they bring you a piece of cardboard, then you're going to say, well, you didn't use the money that I gave you for what you were supposed to do with it, which was bring me food. And you're never going to go there again. But with government, it's like, you have to keep going back and you have to keep buying the cardboard and you got to eat it because you're doing it at gunpoint. If you don't do it, they'll come and get you or they'll come and take your money. And yeah, that's the whole thing. So,
as a state legislator, you know, I also have to think about the whole state. You know, obviously I represent people, I would be representing people in Cedar Rapids. But Iowa is largely a rural state, obviously. And a lot of, people have concerns about losing their family farms to big corporations, having to sell out because of, you know, some of the tariffs that are going on. We've had more bankruptcies for farms in just the last year than we probably ever have.
But I thought Trump we had like the best economy ever.
Right. But he also started a trade war, which fully affects our farmers and their ability to sell out of the country. So.
Wow. Okay. So, and okay, there's a couple things really interesting that you're talking about here. I want to come back to the farms and the bankruptcy, but I want to talk about this because you said even though you're running for Cedar Rapids and you're supposed to represent those people, you also have to consider everybody else outside of Cedar Rapids, but for one thing, why even care about them if they're not voting for you? But also, like, it seems like, and I know it works this way with like U.S. senators, right? And I guess even U.S. Congress, where they fight for money for their own state, and basically they're like, screw all the other states. So it's this brings up the interesting question is. Is there a lot of that stuff I would imagine there is in any state house. There's a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, I'm going to fight to get the state's treasury to send money to my district, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's roads or subsidies or that kind of thing. And like, you know, obviously there are statewide rules that are like, you know, whether it's gun shop laws or those types of things. And they might even have like across the board rules that are like that affect certain places. So like, you know, even though it's like across the board, we're creating a new tax on some type of business, no matter where it is in the state, that type of business only exists in one part of the state, so it's ultimately only taxing that you know, that region. So this is kind of really interesting. Do you want to kind of give me your opinion on that? Yeah, sort of thing?
My opinion is that as a libertarian, I feel like we do things a little differently than Democrats and Republicans. And I think that fundamentally running as a libertarian, you have to look at the big picture that is with the idea that we all know government makes things less efficient and more costly in general. So when we have legislators in office that can look at the big picture and be able to say, is this something that can be done? Is there another way we can do this without involving the government? That's an idea that's not being looked at by the R's and D's. So fundamentally, libertarians operate differently, right? So when I say I would be working for all of Iowa, I'm working for all of the Iowa taxpayers because my vote counts. You know, when I vote on a bill, whether it's yes or no, it counts for all of Iowa, or counts. It doesn't just count for my district. So,
right. But wouldn't it? I would think. So, okay. So you're absolutely right with that. But at the same time, let's say Cedar Rapids has a specific need, you could argue. So let's say, you know, we're talking about farm bankruptcies, and let's just say hypothetically that only happens in Cedar Rapids. You could say, I want to fix this problem, and, you know, maybe not fight against other people trying to solve other problems, but you want to fix this problem, and you really fight hard and focus on that, even though it doesn't fix anything for anybody else, but at the same time, it's not hurting anybody else. Cause I think that's where the whole role of government gets screwed up in the first place, is you have, you know, if the government does something good for one single person and absolutely nobody else, what does that really matter? That's not a huge deal. Unless they steal from everybody else, or they do something that negatively impacts everybody else to help that one person, that's I think where it becomes a real problem. So I think you're, you know, as you say, like libertarians do things differently, but I think like if you're considering, you know, the NAP in this whole thing, like that's, I think that's really the most important side of this, is that whatever you do, whether it helps one person or the entire state, that it doesn't hurt anybody. I think that's
right. It's the unintended consequences that go along with that decision, right?
Right. So okay, cool. So let's, you know what? I totally just started talking as soon as the intro was over. I said I was going to give you a minute to share the video around, and I was going to ask anybody watching to share this video as well. Did you get it? Did you get a chance to share it while the intro was going?
I don't think I did.
But okay, go ahead and share it now. I'm going to go do the same. And anybody who's watching, definitely go share this as well. Because especially if you're in Iowa, or if you know anybody in Iowa. And yes, if you don't know anybody in Iowa, yes, there are other people in Iowa who also know people in Iowa. I've been there, actually. I was just there recently. And if you saw... What's that?
We loved having you.
Yeah. I got to hang out with Myra a lot. We went shooting to the shooting range. So if you saw those pictures of me, we're actually... I still have the footage of that. And I gave it to someone who's gonna edit that into like a little sizzle for us. So that's going to be fun. I still want to see what, so we shot it in, my phone does 4K 60 frames. So I want to see what that slow motion footage looks like, because I think that's going to be cool.
You still haven't even looked at it on your phone?
I have, but so this is what pisses me off. This is like terrible software design, and Google's to blame for this. So my camera will record high speed, but it won't play back in slow speed.
Okay, I get you.
And I loaded it into my computer, and my computer will not play back in slow speed either until I like put it into a video editing program and like go through all this, like, and I'm like, come on guys, like this is the 21st century already. Like we should have a firm grasp on our technology at this point. And I know what it is because there's like with Apple, and I hate Apple so much. I just did a backup of my laptop that literally took 32 hours. Yeah, it was so, and like the first 12 or 18 hours or so, I stopped looking for it was preparing. Like, not even, it's so ridiculous. I'm like, I could have just dragged the files and copied it to this hard drive. Like, I have a really fast hard drive and everything. It was just
have a firm grasp on our.
Is that me or you?
It's me. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I got it.
Yeah. See, that's another one. And then like Facebook's ridiculous. Whatever. Technology. I hate it. And I work in technology. I work with technology, on technology, whatever you want to call it. And I absolutely hate it because there's just so much weird stuff going on. Okay. I'm shared. Are you shared?
I'm shared.
Okay. Back to your regularly scheduled program. Okay. So, you were talking about, farm bankruptcies and people losing their farms. And this really interests me, especially right now, because I'm always talking about how libertarians can identify with the left. And especially with this coronavirus thing, I've been pointing out how, you know, there used to be this thing about the American dream where we would all own a house. You know, we'd have, you know, 2.5 kids and like, you know, white picket fence and all this other stuff. But now it seems the norm is renting. And I've identified that a lot of it is inheritance tax, property tax, FHA loans. And, you know, so even when you get a house, you're still just in massive debt for the rest of your life. And so I want to hear everything you know about farms and how, because it's a type of property, obviously. How does this happen? How do farmers go bankrupt and how do they lose the farm?
Well, I don't mean to be an expert by any means. I grew up in the city, but I do know that there is some frustration about, you know, just even over the last generation of farmers, corporations come in and they buy the land because Iowa land is fairly expensive. So once it hits a good price, corporations can come in and they buy the land from these people and then they leave Iowa. You know, they retire instead of handing down their farms to their children or their grandchildren. And so all of these farms have been turned into corporations. The family farm is almost completely gone by the wayside. It almost doesn't exist. Hobby farms exist. People that want to own, you know, 10, 20 acres and put out food at the farmer's market, those are still around and that's great. But as far as actual farms that are selling their products to manufacturers, they're not family farms anymore.
So they all belong. So, okay, explain a little bit about how this economy works, because I was there. I got to see the well, I was told about the Captain Crunch factory, which like fascinated me. I totally wanted to check that out. So how does this work? Because when you have family farms, okay, so first of all, you said a hobby farm is about 10 to 20 acres. How big is a family farm? Are they bigger than that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Like how big would a family farm be?
Hundreds of acres.
Wow.
And usually they they'll focus on one part of the industry. So they'll either grow corn or soybeans are the big producers here. I assume if we ever make hemp legal, that will be another big producer here as well. You know, then you have your farms that have livestock, their pigs and, you know, cows.
So if you're growing, like, let's say corn, for example, and you have like a big cereal manufacturer, that manufacturer is basically, they're buying from a bunch of small farms, and they're using all of that to fill their production line so they can make the cereal that they're making. So I guess, okay, so they depend on selling their product. Now, here's the thing. If, let's say, for example, 100 acres is huge. I would imagine that land probably costs, you know, maybe whatever. It might have been in their family for a couple generations. But that's probably several million dollars worth of land, right? And so...
tax on that several million dollars of land every year, even if
the property tax is several million.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you have to pay the tax on that value.
Okay. So we're talking about do you know what the property tax rate is there? 1%. So I know like a lot of states are somewhere between 1 and 3%. So let's say it's 1%, right? 1% of a million is 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that's $10,000 a year. If it's 5 million, that's $50,000 a year. If let's say, you know, worst case scenario, Trump goes to trade war, they're not producing enough Captain Crunch to buy all the corn. This farm is unable to sell any of their product. They're unable to raise $50,000 to pay for the property tax. Government comes along and says, well, either you pay the property tax or you give it the land. And if they don't have the income to pay the property tax, and I mean, this is the thing, right? You get rid of the property tax and maybe they can survive for a couple years without selling any corn, right? But
well, we actually had subsidies for farmers to not sell corn too. Like the government will actually pay farmers to not grow. Sometimes, depending on
the price
what they
up, right?
Right, yeah.
That's ridiculous. And this is going on with the milk, I think, in New York. And this blew my mind when I heard about this. They're telling the farmers to just dump the milk. And I'm like, okay, there's only one reason you would tell a farmer to dump the milk, and that's for money, right? To keep the prices up. You eliminate product, you eliminate supply, demand goes up, prices go up. That's exactly what they're doing. And if the government is ordering some farms to dump milk and not ordering other farms to dump milk, it's probably those other farms that are telling the government to tell the other farms to dump their milk, right? This is what really blew my mind about this. Sorry to go totally off on a tangent.
Oh, you're fine.
Is a few years ago, there was a farm who had an accidental spill, and milk contains fat, and fat is an oil, and so the EPA classified this as an oil spill, and they fined them hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they forced them to clean it up as if it were an oil spill.
Right.
And now they're telling them to dump it. This is just like, do people not see this? Do they not know this shit's going on? What is...
And if you were to allow the market to work in a natural way, if people were suddenly not buying as many milk products or weren't buying as much cheese or whatever, then the farmers would naturally either have to lower their price or reduce their production by themselves. They would do it all by themselves.
And switch to another product like toilet paper, which we're in a shortage of. Like, I mean, that's the thing. That was another interesting, I won't go into that one, but that was another, I read an interesting article about why that happens. Okay, fine. Short version. Everyone's staying at home, so they're buying the little fluffy rolls instead of like the hard giant rolls that they sell. And so it's a completely different industry, different factories, different companies, different truck routes and everything. And so we shifted the entire supply. So there is actually people buying more of a different kind of toilet paper and not the industrial, because no one's at work anymore using theirs. So, okay, that's a short version of that. Yeah, but so that's exactly right. So if you have too much of a product, so if the government is paying people not to produce corn, do they get to produce something else?
Well, it depends.
Or do they have to just like, nope, you're not, we'll pay you to not grow anything?
Yeah, farming's a very specific science. And I, like I said, I don't claim to be an expert in what happens and all the ins and outs of it. I know the tidbits I get to see on the news every once in a while and the few people that I get to talk to. So I don't know. I don't know if they're allowed to plant other things, maybe soybeans or...
It's probably just depends on what the government feels like doing at the time they come up with the subsidy, I guess, right?
That's why Iowa flips back and forth between red and blue a lot of times, is because it all depends on, you know, who's giving the best incentives at the time, right?
Right. That's a really good point. Because it could be like, eh, 1 year, we're making good money, how about you lower the taxes? And they vote for the Republican. And then another year, they're like, eh, we're not selling so much, how about some subsidies? And they vote for the Democrat.
Right, exactly.
Wow. Talk about fair weather friends. Fair weather voters. So back to this point about the property tax. And okay, so let's say you have this massive, like a couple hundred acres. I've heard this story a million times where, okay, you're not producing, it's like this, right? Let's say you have, I guess any business, right? You have overhead, you have an operating cost, you have employees. And even if your business is not making money, you still got to pay your employees. Now, you could, let's say you're not making any money. You could let your employees go. They'll find other jobs somewhere else, hopefully. Or maybe they own their own home, so it's not that big of a deal, which is ideally, that's the American dream that we should have. You don't work for a couple years. It shouldn't be a big deal. Because we all own our homes and everything else. If you own the land, and especially with a farm, you shouldn't be worried about anybody taking that from you. You should be able to weather out a couple years of not producing any. What if it's just a water shortage, like a famine, right? Or like a drought, right?
Yeah.
So
too much water. Even too much water will keep, you know, when the plains flood.
Right.
Then what do you do?
So under any of these circumstances, you should be able to say, okay, we can't sell any food this year, but it's okay, we'll survive. But government comes along and says, you got to pay your taxes anyway. And like what you were talking about is corporations coming in, which is a big threat, because a lot of people hate the big corporate farms because they don't treat their animals well. They usually, like, they cram a bunch of chickens, which even if you don't care about the lives of chickens and cows and everything, you get a lot more disease that way. You get a lot more contaminated foods and everything else. It's bad. But these are the corporations who are buying all the land, and they come in and they're like, oh, well, you can't pay your property tax. So you want to, like you said, retire. Sell us your land. And they're in a very powerful negotiating point because, like, they got to sell it fast, because if they don't, the government's just going to come and take it and auction it. That's what they do with property tax. So, like, again, taxation is theft. I know there's a million reasons, and I'm a fucking broken record, but it's just another reason why, you know, we have to say it. Taxation is theft, because it is at the core the reason that all these farms are being taken from family farms and being consolidated and given into the hands of big corporations that everybody hates. They all hate the big corporations, but they love the taxes that give the power to those corporations, because they think the billionaires are paying, but the billionaires aren't paying it. The taxes are not there for billionaires. The taxes are there so the billionaires can come and steal from everybody else.
Well, and that's the other thing, is that when corporations come in, they're given incentives by the government to come in, right?
Like
they're given tax breaks.
Right, like, you know, you're not going to pay taxes for the first 5 years
Or 20.
Or ever. Yeah, wow.
Right, yeah. So it's not fair. It's not a good system. It's a rabbit hole for sure.
So what do we do about this?
What do I? Well, I mean, property tax is part of my platform. Obviously, I think, like you do, that if you are free and clear from the bank and you owe no debt, then you owe the government nothing either. Honestly, I don't think you should owe the government to begin with, but I think it's an incentive to get people to pay down their debts and to be able to live debt-free. If you're able to say, well, if you're free and clear from the bank, this property belongs to you and you owe us nothing. Right. It belongs to your family forever and ever.
And if you're trying to get to that point, the income tax means you have to work twice as long, twice as hard to get the same amount of money to pay that. Like, I mean, think about it. If you own a home and you're paying it for 30 years and your payments are $1,000 a month and you can only afford $1,000 a month because the government is stealing $2,000 a month from you. That's an extra $2,000 a month that you could just spend real quick on pay off your loan. And,
I think that when you are allowing people to own their own property without their property tax, you're giving them wealth. You're giving them more of a value than money at that point. You know, right. You're an actual wealth that they can pass down from.
It's a basic necessity for survival, right? It's what food, water, and shelter is like the three basics, right? And your shelter is obviously on land. And if they can tax the land away from you, I mean, like, there's even like some weird situations where, like, yeah, you can own the house, but you can't own the land. It's like, okay, what are you going to do? Drag the house down the street with you? Like, throw it on the top of like the flying whatever, the little wagon, and like pull it down the street with you? No, that's idiotic. I guess you could RV it, but they tax those too. Maybe the taxes are a little bit less, but it's absolutely insane. And you know, you're right about wealth too. And this is really interesting because when I talk to the left, the left hate the wealthy, and this is really bad for two reasons. One, there's nothing wrong with being wealthy if you didn't gain your wealth through illegitimate means. But two, it creates a resentment, and I used to think like this, and I used to know plenty of other people who did too, of I don't ever want to have money or be wealthy because I hate those people. Right. And that mindset sets you up for failure. It sets you up to be this is what's really difficult about this, because when you get into that mindset, you hate the wealthy for what they have. You want the government to take it and give it to you. But at the same time, you're basically justifying your own life to be forever in debt and paying rent and never having wealth of your own, never owning land of your own. And what's so
into other facets too, because I mean, my husband employs a lot of people, and I've worked in the industry for a long time, and I don't know how many times I've had people that have been put up for a promotion to be able to say, hey, I want you to be a supervisor. We're going to pay you this much more money. And they say, I can't take that because if I make $50 more, I'm going to lose my house. Like, I no longer get to live in my subsidized housing.
Yep.
So I'm going to deny all efforts to try to move ahead in life.
There's always cash bonuses under the table. But yeah, no, that's a very good point. It's government has created that incentive for people to stay stuck there, and that's absolutely terrible. And for somebody in that position, I mean, think about it. How much of a raise would you have to get? Because like I think I've heard the number 600. You get $600 a month towards your subsidized housing, but once you cross that barrier, you lose 600. So basically, if you get a $50 raise, you're losing $550 a month. So you'd have to get a $600 a month raise, which maybe after one or two or three promotions, you might get there.
Right.
But you're never going to get there if you can't take that first promotion.
In the meantime, you still have to feed your family.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're living that close to the edge, $550 is a lot, especially every month. That's like, what are we doing? Like, we should be doing everything we can to be getting people into a place where they own land. And like, a lot of these people on the left look at that as like, no, landowners are evil. They're landlords. And it's like, wait a minute. If there weren't all these taxes, you might be living in land that your great grandparents might have had, and you wouldn't be so desperate for a job right now that you're not getting paid enough for, that you don't have enough money to eat and all this other stuff. That's what you'd be living in, but the government has taken all that away from you.
Right. We're asking the wrong questions. We're asking how do we solve poverty? Well, you can't solve poverty, but how do we produce prosperity? How do we produce a situation to build people up instead of just keeping them at a level playing field all the time?
Right. Yeah, we're asking, I guess we're throwing everybody a life raft instead of letting them build a boat. Mm-hmm. Because people with boats are disgusting. I mean, that's really what it is. It's so weird. And I used to think that when I was younger, and of course I was in California. So I don't know if it was just because I was young or just because of the environment that I was in. But like, a lot of it came through, like, to where I am now, came from like life lessons about, you know, I had to actually be taught that no, money is not the root of all evil. The love of money is the root of all evil. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting that, you know, that changes your whole perspective. But we really got to figure that out. But, you know, as we've said a million times, it's, you know, taxes is what's really the core of what's holding everybody down. And that's, you get rid of those and people are going to do a lot better just automatically.
Well, and people are even starting to ask that question with this whole virus situation. Like, they're doing the math on how many trillions of dollars we've taken out and how much money they actually are going to get in their pocket. And they're saying, hey, why don't you just let me be tax-free for a little bit? Like, why don't you give me some kind of relief from my taxes instead of, you know, printing all of this money, making my money worthless, and, you know, giving me a little bit in return? So right. People are asking those questions. I'm seeing it all over the place.
And we see, like, I mean, so I have a renter in one of my properties in Mexico, and they were like, I lost my job. And I was like, okay, fine. Don't pay rent for a couple months. But the government's not doing that. Right. I mean, even banks, whether it's credit cards or mortgages, they're saying, yeah, you know, just give us a call. Let us know you lost your job or you don't have any income. And we'll work with you. And the government is, here's the thing with property taxes. They're usually due every year. So it's not like you can just say, oh, we're not going to collect it this month because it's not really due every month. But you still don't have that income for, like, so between January and December, you're supposed to be saving up your money so at the end of the year you can pay the property tax. And there's 2 months missing of income. So let's hope it's only 2 months. And then you get to December and it's like, okay, time to pay the property tax. But there's 2 months missing worth of my income. And the government's going to say, sorry, you still got to pay the property tax. The full amount. The full 12 months worth, even though, you know. And so the government is not being very lenient. Now, they are with the student loans, I hear. They're deferring payments, which is good. I mean, that whole program is stupid to begin with, but that's another story. But yeah, I think it's interesting that the government is, they're still charging income tax. They're still charging sales tax, which, you know, everybody's hurting right now, and everything that you buy, your toilet paper is 10% more expensive because you got to pay property tax on it or sales tax on it. It's the government is it doesn't care. Oh, we'll give you some cash. But of course, you're going to spend the next 10 years paying that back.
The other thing too, I mean, even employers, the people that are able to have continued operating businesses right now, they're not pulling back payroll tax. You know, these corporations could totally pay their employees more money right now if they pulled back the payroll tax. And that would definitely pass over to the people that are actually working right now, but they're not doing that either.
And that's just so for anybody who doesn't know how this works, this is so, okay, let's say you get paid $10 an hour. Out of your $10, the government's going to take, you know, 2 to 4. And so you're left, let's say you take 4 and you're left with 6. Your employer is paying tax on top of that also to the government. So instead of paying you $10 an hour, he's actually paying what, 12 or 13? So he's giving you 13 and you're ending up with 6. The government's actually taking more than half. That's this additional payroll that she's talking about. So that's more money that could be going into their pockets. And yes, that doesn't help the people who are unemployed, but let's say you have one person who has a roommate or a brother and they live in the same house. One of them lost their job, the other one didn't. That extra money is really going to go a long way. Mm-hmm. There's no guarantee that they're going to give you the extra. That's a lot of what the left says. Oh, well, so you think if they cut their taxes, they're going to give them. Okay, make it conditional at this point because it's a state of emergency. I'll give you a hall pass on this one. Taxation is still theft and we should get rid of all of it. But tell the employers, if you give your employees a temporary raise, we will temporarily get rid of the tax. So that they have more money and they can take care of the rest of the people in their home or maybe their neighbors who don't have the income right now. Why not do that?
Right.
Why are the nurses paying? This one gets me the worst. You have the National Guard and all of their doctors and all this stuff there, which, by the way, that big boat, those two big boats, they sent one to New York and one to Los Angeles. New York's has 20 patients in it. It's supposed to hold 1,000, and Los Angeles has 15. So that was just like all for show. But and there are like hundreds of doctors on those boats just like sitting there like twiddling their thumbs. Those people are getting paid by the federal government, and they have to pay income tax. Like, okay, we got this job. We're going to pay you $60,000 a year. Just kidding. We're paying you, because it's not like, well, I'm going to pay you $50,000 a year, but the government is going to rob me. No, it's, I'm the government. I'm going to pay you $60,000 a year, but not really. Just on paper. I'm gonna give it to you, but I'm gonna be that. Yeah, I'm gonna keep some of this for myself. Like, how stupid is that? That makes no sense.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I could talk about how much I hate the government for hours. Oh man. So. What else is going on in Iowa?
Well,
before I give myself a panic attack over here.
We have the whole virus thing going on. The governor is not locking down the state, which has completely put people into two different groups of people who are begging for her to put everybody in lockdown, and a group of people that are saying, no, that's not necessary. So that's interesting. It's interesting to like read my Facebook and see people actually begging for the National Guard to come in and lock everybody down.
Like, please, daddy, tie me up.
Which, I mean, I understand when you're scared and when you're fearful, and that's the only option that you know. They probably look at it as she's not doing enough, right, to help. And they want it to look like she's doing more. My whole thought on the situation is, you know, if you're an individual, you know how to take care of yourself best, right? So
right, what's to keep you from just locking yourself in your house? And what do you care what the neighbors?
I've been locked in my house. I don't want germs. I am a germaphobe. I don't like it. So the whole situation has me already anxious. So my family is locked down already. But what if I were in a situation where I thought my life was in danger and I needed to leave my situation, right? So it should be my choice. Like, what if my husband, you know, is an abuser or is, you know, an alcoholic or I can't stay in the situation because it's dangerous for me and my children. I should be able to make that choice for myself. In my husband the other way, if that were me, you know, too. Not, but I feel like people as individuals should be able to make their own choices about weighing the costs of their life. Do you want to die because you're being chased by the National Guard, or do you want to die because you got sick?
Right. Yeah, it's and this is the thing too, like, I know not everybody's like me. A lot of people, like, I like to live dangerously, and I know, you know, a lot of people like to live a lot more safer than the lifestyle I choose, and that's fine. But you know, you can't lock up one group of people in their homes because you're afraid. And like, this is like, okay, so we have it here. I'm in this, like, in this this building that's got, I think, 24 different condos, like units, and most of them are, this is in Mexico, so most people rent them out as vacation homes for other people, and there's maybe 5 that are actually occupied by residents, and nobody's down here just because, you know, most people are like, yeah, we're not going to rent, as a courtesy for the other owners. You know, and there's not a whole lot of tourists coming down anyway, so there's mostly, it's like me and 4 other units. One of the guys who happens to be like the president of the HOA is just like, he's losing his mind over this. He was like, he sent in the group chat. He's like, okay, we've got lounge chairs out by the pool. And there's apparently there's one apartment that has a renter in it right now. And he's like, they've been lounging by the pool and we don't know if they have coronavirus. So we're going to take the lounge chairs and we're going to lock them up so nobody can come out and lay on them. And I'm like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? Like, if you're that worried about it, don't go lay on the chairs.
Right.
Like, you don't have to lock it. Like, and it's such a small thing, but it's like, come on, man. Are you nuts? Like, what? Well, I mean, like, be more concerned about they're opening the door every, you know, every couple hours and they're touching that, and you could touch that and maybe get it that way. But if they're touching the chair, who cares? Like, don't lay there. And so this is what's interesting, because you have a lot of people don't understand any of the actual likelihood of transmission during certain circumstances or how you can get it, where you can get it. I've read things that say if you're in an open air area, like by the pool, like even super spreaders who are like people who are very contagious cannot give it to you just because there's open air. Like, the chances are like ridiculously tiny. But like, they're looking at other states. Oh, other states are on total lockdown. So I was just trying to look this up right now. I don't know if you know. How many cases have actually come out of Iowa? Is Iowa like a high risk state? Are there a lot of cases there?
No, it's not super high risk right now, but I mean, it tends to get to the Midwest slower than it does in more highly populated areas, right? So,
but I mean, like, your city is like, it's not like Cedar Rapids is not. Wait, how many people live there?
I think in this metro area, probably 250,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I mean, I guess it's not a million, but it's not super tiny.
Right. And that's all of the suburbs and the surrounding areas, right? But I mean, we all go to the same places.
But I guess that's an interesting thing to point out, because if you look at that, like, if people are there saying we need to lock this state down, you could just look at the population and be like, no, we're very spread out, or there's like, the chances of this spreading are like ridiculously small. People are still going to go to the grocery store anyway. Like, don't go to the movies.
That's what our governor's been doing. I mean, she said for the most part, essential employees are already working. You know, people that don't need to be out aren't leaving. So there's no need to like take it another step further. Like what's the need for that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, come on, people, use your brains. And like, I'm starting to see these cases all over the place where like, you know, you've got like a nosy neighbor, like, my neighbor, I saw him go to the grocery store twice already today.
Right.
Like, yeah, that's what the police need to be doing. Worry about yourself. Like if this person went to the grocery store, I mean, think about it logically. If this person went to the grocery store twice in one day, does it really matter? Does it make that much of a difference? Does it change their likelihood of getting infected or infecting someone else? Probably not by much.
I know. I see people that you know, post on Facebook, I was getting vegetables at Walmart and I saw a family with two kids there, and this isn't a family activity shopping anymore. But I mean, maybe we don't have a choice. What are you going to do? Leave your kids at home by themselves?
Yes. Like, I mean, honestly, like nobody should bring their kids to the grocery store at all. Kids are just disgusting.
They are. I get it.
They're always picking their nose and wiping it on everything.
DHS will be at your door in 2 seconds if you leave them at home too. So
yeah. Right. That's not smart. I mean, you know, they could like stick something in the electric outlet, or, well, I guess if you don't have those little plastic things in there, you're a bad parent anyway. But it, like, yeah, there's so many things. Like, just pull a shelf down on top of their head and crush them. Like, kids are going to get into trouble. Like, that's definitely not smart. It just blows my mind. Like, it's paranoia. I mean, it's not paranoia. It's a phobia. It literally, everyone's calling it coronaphobia. It is. It is absolutely. It's a phobia. It's an irrational fear.
Yeah, it's generated phobia because that's all that's on our TV. I stopped watching TV about 3 days ago, and my level of anxiety went down dramatically.
And so, like, here's the interesting thing. Like, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's like that. So I had this with my wife. She was always watching the Kardashians, and like, I would hear it in the other room, and I was like, like, and I was like, oh my God, like, what is good? And like, we used to, like, when that was the thing that she would watch, like, we just used to argue over like so much stupid. And then like, when I was like, I just canceled the cable one day and didn't tell her. And like, so she had to stop watching the show, and she's like, what's wrong? I was like, I'll call him and figure it out. But she had to stop watching the show. And because of that, like attitudes just changed. Like, the house became so much more calm. We weren't fighting and all this other stuff. It literally is like all this stuff gets into your brain and totally affects your mood. And when it's propaganda, that's like, oh my God, everything's a war zone, which, you know, that's what they're saying. It's all propaganda. And like, even if you know, this is the weird thing. This is how our brains work. Even if you know it's all fake, it still gets in your brain. And it's still like, there's nothing you can do about it. It's like if you sit in a room that's painted all red on all walls, like, that is going to get to you. Even if you know, like, oh, somebody painted the walls just to mess with me. Like, it's still going to mess with you, even if you know, like, that's what it's. And it's the same thing with TV. Yeah, just turn the fucking TV off. And that was
still get your, it doesn't mean you have to be uninformed.
Right.
You just don't have to have it in your ear all day long, 24 hours a day.
Right. And this was the weird thing, because like around, like, you know, early March, late February, I was in all these airports, and like the airports have it on like every TV. It was insane. And it's just like, you hear it everywhere you go. And it's like, yeah, I get it. You're probably trying, like, the airport's probably like, oh yeah, everyone should stay informed. But it's like, they're putting on this channel that's got this really bad vibe. That's, you know, that programming is literally designed to make you freak out, because not because of like, you know, government propaganda or anything, but because of ratings.
Right.
That's, oh, we got to tune in. What's going to happen next? Like, that's that's intentional.
Yeah.
Turn it off. Get the information and turn it off. Yeah, I wonder if that's why we were so much better with newspapers back in the day. Because, like, you would just see it, you'd read it, and then they'd be done with it. And, like, that was okay. That was cool. No dramatic music. No, like, hearing it echo over and over again, like, everywhere you walk. Like, oh, man. So, okay. I also wanted to talk about, I know, we, like, totally, like, we're going way over time here. If you got to run, let me know. But I did want to talk about drugs, because we love drugs. Just some drugs, just the good drugs. And there's opioid issues in Iowa, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, there's opioid issues everywhere, right? And I don't think that that's necessarily, I think that was another manufactured situation, but from, you know, a different person, not the media, right? It was from Big Pharma.
Right.
Manufactured. But I think as libertarians, we like to talk about the drug war a lot. And I think a lot of times we get the stigma that we're Republicans that like to smoke pot, right? And I'm sure it's not the first time you've heard that.
Nope.
And I think a lot of times our response as libertarians is usually, well, it's my body, my choice, right? And we like to use that catchphrase for everything. But I think there's a whole different side of the drug war that we don't look at, and that's the black market side, and how the black market actually makes us less safe. So even if you feel like your family and your friends are not safe having drugs available to them, you're probably less safe by having them seek it out through the black market in general. Hey, puppy.
She's like, she hears, it's so weird. She'll hear, like, so this is the street right here. And like, if she hears a little jingle, like a dog is, someone's walking their dog out there. And it's really weird because there's this one car. It must be somebody who like works like that way, because I hear them almost every morning with their with their truck, and they drive by, and I just hear like going like 100 miles an hour down the street, and of course she hears that and totally freaks out. But yeah, so black market. And it's not just drugs, right? Because we, you know, whether it's the abortion debate, it's, you know, a lot of people are like, yeah, I don't like abortion, but it's going to create a black market if you ban it. Alcohol sales, sugar, the sugar tax created a black market for Gatorade in Seattle. That still blows my mind. I'm sure there's a black market on toilet paper right now.
Well, and here's the thing, and you and I have kind of talked about this before, but when things are legal, when I can get them at the grocery store, the clerk at the grocery store doesn't follow me home and pretend to be my friend and scope out my house thinking they're going to, you know, break in and steal things later. When we're talking about the black market, we're talking about people that are already predispositioned to do harm and to you know, hurt other citizens in our community. So if we can cut the amount of harm that we're going to do just by simply making it legal, it doesn't mean that I am okay with drugs, or that I think that you should do it, or that I'm saying that you everyone should go out and make their lives better by doing drugs available at the gas station. But I think that we're all safer when we try to reduce the harm and try to get the black market out of the way.
Right. So it's like minimizing, by legalizing, you're minimizing the actual net damage to society.
Right.
Instead of, and this is like, did I have this about? Yeah, I think I was talking to, I don't remember if we were talking about drugs or prostitution. But it's basically the same thing. When you have parents who are concerned, well, I don't want my kids involved in that, whatever it is, whether it's prostitution or drugs or anything. And what I like to tell them is like, okay, like, yeah, and that's great that you love your kids that much that you don't want them to get involved with that. That's fine. And assuming you're a good parent and you know, everything works out great, then you don't have to worry about it. Because even if it's legal, your kids aren't going to go do it.
Right.
But if something happens, if they slip through the cracks, or maybe when you dropped them off at public school and they have to like mingle with like all these other kids from all these other neighborhoods with all these other bad influences, and they start hanging out with the wrong guy, and they get into drugs or prostitution, whatever. I'm just going to lump these two in the same. They go down that path. You find out as a parent, what are you going to do? Do you want to give them a lecture and say, look, this is wrong. I'm not going to support you if you continue to do this. You're on your own. You're out of the house, you know, whatever. Or do you want to call the police on them, have them thrown in prison? Now they have a criminal record. Now they can't get a job. So when they're, let's say it's just a phase, hopefully, for a lot of people it is, or it would be if they didn't have a criminal record. They finish their phase. They go out and say, okay, I want to put my life back together. I want to get a job. Sorry, you have a criminal record. So now like 90% of the jobs are no longer available to you.
Right.
Is that what you want for your kids?
Well, and the other part of that situation is, I don't know how it was for you in high school, but for me in high school, we spent a good part of the day just trying to get our hands on a 6-pack of beer, right? Because it's so hard to get your hands on, and it's legal. But you can look over in your math class and score a bag of weed, you know?
Right.
It's so much easier to get your hands on drugs, whereas if it were legal, we could regulate it. And I'm not for regulations, but we could do the same things to keep it out of the hands of our youth like we do with alcohol.
Right. And I mean, like, yeah, there's self-regulation, too. There's market regulation, which is consumer-based regulation, right?
Sure.
Where Walgreens is selling crack to kids. We're going to boycott Walgreens. Okay, fine.
Right,
Walgreens
yeah.
isn't going to sell crack anymore. And they'd probably foresee that and would never do that in the first place. Well, actually, they do sell it, though, but you just need a prescription.
And it's behind the counter.
Right. Okay. I just totally caught myself on that lie. But yeah, that's the thing. And I guess it's really difficult. Like, it's really difficult. I think this is the position we're in, right? So when you have, okay, we want less people to do drugs, right? Let's just say this is the desire of society, as you know, 90% or everybody, right? Everybody wants less people to do drugs, fewer people to do drugs, excuse me. Okay, if it's legal now and somebody comes along and says, yeah, we're going to make it illegal, and then that way fewer people are going to do drugs, then I would think most people who, you know, they don't have history and statistics and everything else to look at, they would say, well, yeah, I guess if you make it illegal and they're worried about going to jail, then yeah, probably fewer people. I wouldn't do it because I'd be afraid of going to jail. Not that they even do it now, but they'd say that, right? So it sounds like, okay, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. But when it's illegal, it sounds totally backward. Like when you can't look at the statistics or numbers or anything else, it sounds totally backwards to say, well, if we make it legal, fewer people will use them. What? Are you crazy? That doesn't make any sense. But if you don't have the history and the data and like all this other stuff to go on. But
right. Yeah. And the other, sorry, my dogs. the other side of that too is, What about the kid that was harmlessly smoking pot in his car and decided to run from a cop because he was scared he was going to get taken to jail? You know, does that count? Does that count as harm? I mean, that's part of making it illegal too.
Right. Yeah, because if it wasn't illegal, he would. And this is the interesting thing, like too, like I learned about DUIs. If you're driving and you realize, so like some people, like they go out, they have a beer and they drive and they're like, yeah, I'm just a little buzzed. Like I'm totally cool. those same people might start driving and realize, holy shit, I'm actually really drunk. I should pull over and sleep it off.
Right.
If a cop sees you on the side of the road and comes up to your car, you're getting charged with a DUI.
Right.
When you really did the right thing. And like people argue, yeah, well, you shouldn't have been driving in the first place. You shouldn't have drinking at all. One drop is you're an evil person. Yeah, you'll say all that stuff. But he did the right thing, right? By recognizing that he was like, okay, all that stuff is in the past. But at one point he decides, okay, yeah, I shouldn't do this. And you're going to punish him for that. And the worst part about that is if they know that, and a lot of people who drink and drive know a lot of the rules about drinking and driving. If they know that, once they start driving and they realize that they're too drunk, they're not going to pull over and stop. Because then they know for sure a cop's probably going to, that's a red flag car on the side of the road. They're going to get a DUI. Where if they make it all the way home, they're safe. What do you think they're going to do? And so and I'm not saying people should drink and drive, especially when they're that drunk. But when you criminalize even fixing the behavior, and this is how ridiculous it gets. Like you could be, you go to a bar, you're going to have one beer. So you bring your own car, you end up getting trashed and you're like, I can't drive. You just go to the parking lot, you sit in your car, you turn it on so that you don't, especially if you're in Iowa, it's freezing up there. You turn on your car. So you got the heater on so you can just sleep it off. You'll drive home in the morning. Well, you're operating a motor vehicle because you've got it turned on and the heater going.
Yeah, even if you're, behind the steering wheel, your car doesn't even have to be on.
Yep.
You're automatically charged and with you.
And it's what, I mean, for money, obviously we know that, but this is like to the normal person. And this is how they sell it, right? To the normal person. Oh yeah. We're going to create more laws. We're going to get stricter. We're going to pass more laws because it's going to stop this, where, you know, too many people are dying from DUI, even though like, I mean, not to minimalize anybody who's ever died in a DUI, but I mean, heart attacks kill millions more people every year. And we're not focusing on the food companies that are selling things that are giving us heart attacks so much. So it's like, you know, we can focus on that and we can save millions of lives, but no, let's focus on this and we'll make some money. And we'll save a couple of lives. It's like the more of these laws that you pass, and it sounds like you're doing a wonderful thing for society, but the more of these laws that you pass, the more people you put in danger.
Right.
All the time.
Well, because they try to regulate morality instead of try to do the right thing. Right. So morality can't be regulated. What your choices are can't be legislated out.
Right. Mine didn't hear it. If mine didn't hear it, she's not going to bark. All right, Myra. Give us all the information. I've got your link to your Facebook page in the description. I've got it on screen here. That's facebook.com/ I'm surprised I spelled your name right today. How do you pronounce that?
It's Mateka.
Mateka.
Yeah.
So the J is silent.
Yes.
Mateka in the house. Okay. Facebook.com/Mateka in the house. The link's there in the description. But tell us, what can we do? Somebody wants to help you out. They want to get your message out. Where do they go? What do they do? What do you need?
Well, right now I'm asking for all the endorsements I can get. So if anybody is watching and they want to shoot me a video that says, I know Myra, I've worked with Myra, I think she's super cool, I will definitely put together a video of all of the people who endorse my campaign, and I think that will be really awesome. I'm not really asking for money right now, just because I think everyone needs to keep their own money until this blows over and we can see what happens. So I'm not hitting people up for fundraising right now at all. Just because I don't need it.
If you're not asking for money, what can somebody do to help share your message? I guess keyword being share, since we're on Facebook, to help share your message and get your message out there. Because ultimately, the reason we need money for these campaigns is to spread the word, advertising, information, all these other things. I guess that's the thing, just share all the content, right?
Go to my Facebook page, send me a message. If you're in Cedar Rapids and or even nearby Cedar Rapids and you want to help out the campaign, once all this blows over and we're able to actually get out into the community, we're going to be doing a lot of volunteering. We're going to be doing a lot of door knocking. So we're going to mobilize really quickly, but we need all hands on deck when that happens. So if you want to help out that way, I will absolutely get back in touch with you.
Awesome. All right, Myra, it's always a pleasure. For anyone who doesn't know, Myra already has my endorsement. She's part of our SWAT team. She's actually part of our campaign. She is an absolutely amazing person. And a great libertarian. She knows her stuff. She knows what's right. She knows government is always a pain in my ass. She knows taxation is theft. So she absolutely has my endorsement. Get out, vote for her, support her. Even if you're not in Iowa, you can absolutely support her. You can help her out. Can they donate out of state?
Yes, they can donate out of state.
But you're not asking for money yet. So when everything blows over, then donate. But for now, help her anyway. Share the information.
I need help with my website. I need help with writing policy. There's a lot of things that can be done. So, yeah.
Awesome. We're building a team. All right, Myra, it's been awesome.
Thank you.
I will see you next time. Taxation is theft.
It's theft. Thank you.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.